Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Newdecker. Today I am joined by someone who is a Northern Lass. She's very funny, and in the last year her social media has completely exploded. She puts up some fantastic content day to day. She's an awesome person. I defy anyone to chat to her for 30 seconds without bursting out laughing. So thank you, Sarah Duff, for joining
us. Oh my God, what an intro, and the pressure is now on for me to try and make people laugh with
me. No, don't. This is a fantastic start, I just have to say.
So, oh my God, so thank you very much for A, the introduction, and B, for having me on. It's a real honour.
Well, it's lovely to have you on. So obviously, give some of the listeners a little bit of a background on you and how you got into fitness in the first place, so they got a bit of an idea.
So I've probably had a slightly different journey to many people, in that my fitness career only started about 5 years ago, really. I was cabin crew for 14 years and got to the point where I needed a career change. I'd always been into fitness. I will disclose this to you all now, that I used to want to be a Baywatch lifeguard.
That is amazing.
I'm not even kidding yet. I think I started doing like Cindy. I think it was Cindy. I can't believe I've admitted this. Cindy Crawford workout with, like, you know, the pink dumbbells, etc.
In my dad's
living room.
Oh,
so that was kind of slightly different to how I train now, you know.
Yeah, a little bit different.
So it was always, fitness was always something that I was, you know, interested in, looking after myself. And then when I was flying, I flew with a girl who was into weightlifting, etc. And she kind of introduced me to that, because I'd been a real cardio queen. I was your typical, let's just hit the treadmills. Yeah, this is it. This is life. And she introduced me to weight, so I actually did my first ever weight training session in a gym in Nairobi.
Wow.
It was, with some highly suspect looking equipment. I'm not going to lie to you, how I didn't get like some kind of crazy rust disease off it.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, because it was,
you need
it
to was shot for that. Yeah.
you basically did. But then I got really into reading up more and more about it. And then when I finally made the decision that I wanted to leave the airline industry, I decided that it would just be a good thing to try and combine working with people, because I didn't want to stop working with people, because I quite like people, and fitness. So then I retrained as a personal trainer, and then it kind of all evolved from there. I jumped into the industry, signed up for my only competition, for stepping on stage in a mahogany orange state bodybuilding competition, on the first day that I started my new job as a PT, because I kind of thought that's what everyone in the industry did, which
this is what you
kind of do. Crazy. So that is basically been, I mean, I've moved far away from the whole competing thing, but that was kind of basically my journey into the fitness industry. And then there's been kind of a progressive journey since that very first day, really. So that's kind of me.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, when you said you started off competing, and I think a lot of people, like personal trainers, they start with competing, because it's almost like you look around and see what everyone else is doing and you're like, oh, I have to do that. I have to get orange and really lean and tanned and go on stage naked. That's what you do as a coach. And then
it's an insane thing. I think it's very much promoted as being the only way that you're going to make something of yourself in the industry. And, you know, essentially you stepping on stage is not really helping anybody. It's not something that your clients, I mean, I'll fully put my hand up now and say, when I first started, because I was training in that particular way, that was what I thought my clients needed as well. And you know, my style now couldn't be more different if I tried, because that's not That's not what your average person wants or needs. They don't need to train like an athlete or somebody that's about to step on stage. They don't need to eat like that either. No, it's insane. No,
it's insane, isn't it? And I think, to be honest though, you going through that and doing that, doing competing, for example, it must have really changed your mindset, obviously. And coming back from that mindset change, you must have more insight into helping people with mindset.
100%. I mean, as much as I look back at it and I think, my God, why did I do that? But it did teach me a lot, first of all, about myself. And, you know, I would say majority of people that do that do not come out unscathed or unbroken with some kind of mindset, psychological issues, or a changed relationship with food and their body. And I came out of it and I had both of those. And, you know, it wasn't for the better. It put me in a dreadful kind of like not really liking my body, overtraining, a little bit of binge eating here and there. Like, it was a full on, you know, a few years before I got myself back to kind of being a way more balanced, but it has taught me an awful lot. So, you know, to that I will say I don't regret doing it in any shape or form.
Absolutely. And I think it highlights the importance of mindset and why people should make
hugely.
It a priority. And for your clients and just people day to day, why would you say that mindset, working on your personal development, self-development is important?
Because if you go into something with a mindset of, first of all, not really knowing why you're doing something, or not really knowing what your real why is, then you don't really know why you're doing it. You can't identify what the steps are that you need to take to get you to whatever it is that you're ultimately trying to achieve. And having the kind of incorrect mindset at the beginning of something like a weight loss journey is going to result in you never really fully embracing the steps that you need to take, and kind of, I would describe it as almost dipping your toe in and out of the process. And this toe dipping is not going to get you results. It's not going to get you where you want to be, ultimately. All it's going to do is leave you constantly dipping in, dipping out, dipping in, dipping out, and never actually getting to where you want to be. And it's a cycle of frustration. The cycle of frustration then leads you further down the rabbit hole of not being able to ever get to reach your goal. So I think people, you know, I'm not saying that people should ultimately do nothing, even if their mindset's not 100% right or they haven't identified, because something is always better than nothing. But I think people need to realise if they want to succeed and they want to get results, and that this can be applied to anything, it's not just fitness or weight loss, it's anything, then you need to make sure you know why you're doing it, and, you know, really, really identify and be honest with yourself about things. Because without the correct mindset, then you are just going to keep going around in this really irritating cycle.
Absolutely. You're going to hit the same frustrations, the same walls, and you're not going to be able to break through them because you haven't done that self-progression to get to the next level.
Exactly.
And it's going to help with you. It's going to help with consistency, essentially, which is what, I mean, it's the main thing that is going to help with your fitness and your fitness and your nutrition. It's consistency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's huge component. So, I mean, you must have experiences like stress, obviously, because, like, you know, you have a business, you've got a really busy lifestyle, and also you've had stresses in the past. How would you say that influences food choices for people, and how can they avoid the stress affect comfort eating and the way they make food choices, for example?
Yeah, stress is a difficult one, and I actually don't think people take it seriously enough or realise how much it impacts how they behave on a day-to-day basis. I kind of describe stress as giving you what I would call a wobbly mind. Mm-hmm. So it means that when you're stressed, the only thing that you tend to really focus on is the thing that's stressing you out. So any other decisions or anything else you're trying to do kind of become like a sideline of this wobbly mind focus on the stress thing. And kind of what happens with food is that when some people get stressed, they eat more. And when some people get stressed, they eat less. I eat less when I get stressed.
Yeah,
but if you're somebody that eats more, if your concentration or your stress is leading your mind away from making good decisions about food, then you're going to be reaching for more and more of the kind of non-optimal foods. So mm-hmm. you just, because that's what you think you need to make you feel better. And you also become very, when you're stressed, you become very mindless. So the eating then becomes completely mindless as well. So you're just reaching for things rather than thinking, right, well, you know, should I or would, is this going to be what I need? Because at that moment in time, you don't really care, because the food or your food decision is not what is important. Whatever the stress is what's important to you, really. Yeah.
And it's really becoming mindful of your decisions day to day, so that you're not just seeking a sugary high to just blunt something. You're dealing with those things. You're being mindful of them and being mindful of your emotions, really. So, I mean, have you done any looking into mindfulness? Do you advocate it to people? Do you recommend it? Is it something you've ever experienced before?
Yeah, so mindfulness, I think, is very, very important. I mean, when it comes down to kind of stress eating, I will always say to people that the first thing that you need to do is identify that that is something you actually do. So mm-hmm. say to yourself, I know when I'm stressed, my tendency is to eat, insert whatever food it is. And once you've admitted that to yourself, then when situations arise, you need to identify that this is what's happening and make sure that you've got systems in place to make sure that you're not reaching for the sugary food. So, you know, identifying the emotion and then doing something different, or having barrier food. So saying mm-hmm. to yourself, when I feel this way, I am going to reach and eat a handful of carrot sticks or three celery sticks before I make any other decisions about mm-hmm. any other kind of food, really. Absolutely. So that's something that I use with people quite a lot. And, you know, from a perspective of actual mindfulness, I do encourage my clients to, you've heard of the app Headspace?
Yeah.
So I try and get people to do, it doesn't even need to be like the long ones, there's little mm-hmm. short mindfulness, like guided meditation on there, which can be really useful. So in times of stress, you know, just go and sit in a room, and even if you don't want to use the app, just go and sit away and just for a minute just try and breathe deeply and just kind of refocus yourself and just calm your mind down a little bit, just so that you can then go back to whatever decision you were about to make, go back to it and make it in a slightly more calm and less like kind of manic state. Easier said than done. It's not something that just happens overnight, but
I mean, like, it's going from that reactive state into a state of actually making decisions mindfully. And you can only do that when you bring down your stress levels, you start breathing properly, and sometimes you do just have to, like, literally take yourself out of a situation just go do it, and that's totally fine. And but I think people don't allow themselves that time to just go take 10 minutes, and I think that's the main issue. And put that in combination with a stressful environment at work, for example, and someone is like doing things over and over again, they're in a reactive state, and their boss is being a complete dick, and then all of a sudden Sue comes in the office with like a plate of cookies, and
can I just say something, like, office, there should be some kind of, I'm not saying a law, but there needs to be something done that puts a complete and utter ban on people taking food, freaking biscuits and cookies and all this kind of stuff just into the office. I mean, yeah. Everyone at the end of the day has responsibility for their own actions. But as we say, in times of stress, people aren't thinking, and feeding people freaking biscuits and stuff, it's like, why?
It's not going to help the situation. Like, no. A budget is not going to get done quicker if you eat 3 McFitties soon. It's just not. Like, I agree. I think you should propose it to...
I'm doing it. I'm going to go to, I can't even remember what the name of the Prime Minister is at the minute. What's her? Anyway, that woman that's in charge of England at the minute. Never mind all this Brexit business. I'm going to go to her and say, look, I think...
Absolutely. Storm in there, right through the middle. Be like, you know what? I know you've got all this Brexit stuff, yeah? But biscuits, can't be having them in the office.
Let's talk biscuits.
Yeah, so that's the easy solution. We just ban biscuits.
Yeah, that's it. I'm on it.
But I mean, like, how would you other than banning them, obviously, how do you recommend dealing with food pushers in the office, for example?
So I have this thing about food pushers and people saying, well, so and so made me have this. They wouldn't be quiet, or they wouldn't leave me alone. Like, I know these situations are hard, but people need to realise a couple of things, actually. They need to realise that they ultimately always have control of whether they say yes or no to a biscuit or a slice of cake. Nobody is going to die if they don't. Nothing huge is riding on you having this slice of cake, other than the fact that this person is offering it to you and you feel like it's rude to say no.
Yeah.
The thing is that people, when you say to people, so why did you feel like you had to take the piece of cake? Well, I didn't want to offend them. I didn't want to upset them. And
yeah,
I'm like,
true, yeah.
I actually don't think that they really care that much whether you have the slice of cake or take the biscuit. That in your mind, you have blown that way out of proportion. Mm-hmm. And if you just say no, and even if you have to say it 2 or 3 times, that there is not ultimately going to be anything bad. They're not going to fall out with you. It's a biscuit, for frick's sake.
Mm.
So I think this is, you know, I think sometimes people use it as a bit of an excuse.
Yeah.
As, well, you know, I now don't have to take responsibility for that because
100%, yeah.
they offered it to me, and it would have been rude of me to say no. And the other thing that people need to remember is that when that person has offered the biscuit and you've taken it, or the slice of cake or whatever it is, you've taken it, you've eaten it, that person walks away, they've forgotten that they've given you that biscuit.
Yeah.
You are probably then going to sit there and be like, well, why did I do that? Or did I need to do that? It's you then that's got to live with the consequences of this biscuit. And this isn't to say, let's just get this clear, having a biscuit is absolutely fine.
Yeah,
but it's when people are consistently saying, well, I couldn't say no to this and I couldn't say no to that. You can always say no.
Yeah.
There is, it's down to you at the end of the day. And I feel like quite passionate about trying to empower people into knowing that they can always, always say no. And, you know, food pushers, they're everywhere.
Mm.
They really are. And I think especially a big one actually moving away from biscuits is alcohol.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, people that work working in London, working in the city, or people that do a lot of like socialising with work and stuff, there's a lot of people that find it very difficult to say no to alcohol. But it's exactly the same thing. I mean, I say to my clients, if you feel bad, you know, if you don't want to be the one that's not drinking or whatever, then just pretend you're having a drink. Just say that you're having a vodka and soda or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think with alcohol, it's a little bit more touchy as well, because people feel like they need it maybe for a little bit of confidence. And
completely.
Yeah, and then that's their crutch, and then they can say, oh, but you know, everyone else has it and I feel bad if I don't have it. But yeah, it's just taking ownership of it and saying, you know what, this is actually my decision and no one else has to change that. But I think it could also be a little bit of British being nice as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, people need to ditch the, especially UK, people need to ditch the being polite and do what's right for them. Like, I'm all for it. So somebody comes to me and say, yeah, I had a drink last night, and I'm like, was that because you wanted to have a drink, mm-hmm. or was it because you felt obliged to have a drink? And if it's the latter, and it's the I felt obliged, then I'm like, well, that was your decision to do that. No one made you do it. Yeah. Type thing.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's an empowering thing to think that you are in control of your decisions. It does make you feel better in the end. And actually, when you wake up the next day and you haven't got a splitting headache and you've stayed on track, the feeling is going to far outweigh how you'd feel if you had said that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. 100% agree.
So, yeah. So, I mean, with training, with your nutrition, obviously, with it being the weekend, obviously, people tend to lose that motivation over the weekend, and they have trouble over the weekend to stay on track with their macros, for example, or stay on track or whatever diet they're doing.
Yeah.
How do you recommend people get that motivation back to just hit their goals and keep it consistent over the weekend?
So people have this real tendency when with weekends is to kind of completely disconnect it from anything true to life or real life. It's like it's kind of a reward period for people. So they'll be, amazing during the week, stick to their training, their eating's been great, and it's kind of this association of, well, because I've done X, Y, and Z, that means that I deserve this reward. And it's absolutely fine if it's a reward that's just like a piece of pizza or two glasses of wine or whatever. But what very often happens is that people really miss what's the word I'm looking for? Underestimate that, if they go out and have a full pizza, two glasses of wine on one night, and then the next day lay about in bed because they're tired because they've had a really hard week, so they're going to reward themselves with a little lie-in, and then that night it's like, well, I'm a bit tired, well, I had a really good week, so I'm now going to have a takeaway on the Saturday night, mm-hmm. and it just kind of goes into this full weekend of nothing really being anywhere, nothing reflecting how they've been behaving during the week. So it's like it's a completely different entity. Or on the flip side of that, you've got the people who just basically, they go out on the Friday night, have a little bit of a crazy night, and then just think, well, I've screwed that up, so I'm just gonna go hell to leather for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's a crazy mindset. It's one that I think I couldn't even put a percentage on it, but a very high percentage of people, that is the thing that is standing in the way of them meeting their goals.
Yeah.
I try and get people to really just not pretend that the weekend's not happening, but almost not to put it in this great big halo of sanctuary where nothing else matters, that nothing that they've been doing during the week can be carried over. Like, there still needs to be boundaries.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if, we could just all go hell for leather every week and there not be any impact. But unfortunately there is. And people mustn't think that they can fully get away with just going out and doing it every weekend and that they're still going to be able to get to their goals, because ultimately they probably aren't.
No, exactly. And it's not to say, like you said, you can have a biscuit, you can have an extra glass of wine, you can go out and socialise, but it's not chaos, it's kind of,
exactly.
It's just a few rules, like a controlled chaos, basically.
Yeah.
So you're not going hell for leather, but at the same time, you're not going to completely screw up your diet, essentially, or your, because you can't screw up anyway, so you can always get back on track.
Exactly.
It's just that mindset of it not being black and white. You can always steer it back on. But
no, exactly. And I think there's that other thing of people being, putting too much restriction on themselves during the week, so that then they feel like they need to go out and have certain things every weekend. So I think people maybe just need to ease up on the kind of not be as restrictive and maybe just give themselves a little bit of a break so they don't have that need anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you can allow yourself to have a few bits and bobs during the week, it's going to take the pressure off the weekend as well. It doesn't exactly work for everyone, but for some people that works really well.
Yeah.
So in terms of, obviously, we've got onto a lot more talking about sort of weight loss, fat loss, and at the beginning of your journey as well, I think it can be really difficult when you're doing any type of measuring. And for example, scale weight is a massive problem for some people. And for some people, they put a lot of emphasis on the scale weight. And obviously, we know it's not all about that. There's so many other variables that are important. So how would you deal with someone who's been working really super hard and they're just not seeing that reflecting on the scale for, say, like a month?
Yeah, I mean, the scales are just, they're such a touchy subject for people. And it can be very difficult as a coach to try and get somebody to really reason with themselves. Because I can tell them till I'm blue in the face that, you know, they're making progress in this, that and the other. But if somebody is that number focused on the scale, it can be very, very difficult to get them to just kind of ease back from it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I use as many different ways of tracking progress with my clients as I can. So I thought that was vodka.
I did surreptitiously just take a little sip of water, and I was like, actually, this is like a huge bottle. I wonder if she's gonna notice.
It's like, actually, seriously,
like a little, like a small, tiny person in comparison to this.
Oh my god.
So guys, I'm doing this interview sort of half cup today. I'm a little bit drunk.
The variety of progress markers, yes. So from tape measurements obviously to clothes to pictures to how people are feeling, how they're performing in the gym. I mean, you really have to try and paint a bigger picture, as full a picture as you possibly can. Because I'm trying just not make sure that that everything is celebrated, not just scale drops. Everything needs to be, you know, really taken as a yes, you know, this is things moving forward. But it is a really tricky subject, and people struggle with it a lot really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the first few months of weight training, for example, that the fluctuations of your weight can not be quantified in relation to like fat loss, because essentially what's happening is a lot of body recomposition in that you're gaining muscle and you're going to be carrying a lot more water when you're training. So it's very different. So
yeah, no, 100% it is. And I think people just need to just make sure that they're quite educated on all the stuff that can impact the scale weight. And you know, if you are going to weigh yourself, it needs to be done daily, and averages taken. And actually, I've just found a new quite a good app which called Happy Scale. I don't know whether like you've heard of it.
No,
and it's very good, because so you put the weight in daily, and it plots a graph and it draws lines, so through all the little ups and downs you can see what the trend is. I mean, yeah, and it gives you like little like progress markers and stuff. So actually I've recently found it and recently started using it with some of my clients, and they're finding it really good, because I think people forget. So they focus on what's on the scale that day.
Yeah.
They forget that like the day before or 2 days before they've been one weight, then another weight. And what this does is it just evens it all out, so people can actually see what the hell is going on.
It's a downward trend, and
that's what you want.
Like say it's never linear, but that's kind of one way of making it linear for people, so that they can get that reward and they can get that motivation. What would you say, obviously, with people who are training, and obviously it's our jobs in a way to help people not make mistakes with their training and nutrition, but what do you see what do you see a lot of mistakes happening? So if you could see, tell me three mistakes that you see happening quite often with people when they're trying to lose weight, for example.
So many. That's a three. So the first one would be not really underestimating their calories and their portions.
Yeah.
People need to accept that they cannot estimate a portion size. We're not good at it. No one is. I'm not. You're not. No one is.
No.
Absolutely horrendous. So people that are saying, you know, oh yeah, this bowl. I always use granola because granola is the thing that I myself would love my portion to be a portion, but it's not. It's normally double because it's really deceiving.
Yeah.
But people think that little things don't count,
mm-hmm.
but actually 50 or 60 calories per day, and that's a real underestimation, you know, over a week, that's mm-hmm. like, you know, 420 odd calories if it's 60 calories a day that's been unaccounted for, and that's only the lower scale of it, do you know what I mean? Like, so I think people need to stop thinking that that they are good at estimating portions and that they are that they know how many calories are in things, because they don't really.
It's true. I mean, there's a study, isn't there, of actual nutritionists who started tracking, and even they underestimated it. Like, it's everyone does. Everyone just wants to believe they're eating less, I think. And I think that's a kind of subconscious thing that we do. And I think if you can start slightly overestimating, if you're not weighing, obviously, the vital things, then that could also be a helpful thing for people.
Yeah, 100%. Always overestimate, never underestimate. Got to be done. Right, so that's number one. Number two, I will go to a training one in that I think people focus too much in on all of these, I'm going to call them cardio with weight classes. And actually this would be more the female population, I have to say, than the male population. I think there's a kind of misconception that doing a progressive weight training program and going to a cardio with weights class are the same thing, and they're not. Like, a progressive strength training plan is a completely different ball game, and I think that's where a lot of women get frustrated, because they go to these classes thinking that they're going to get the results that you can actually only really get if you go to and do a proper strength training program. And that's not to say in the beginning, if you're very new to training, that you won't get some results from doing those classes, because you absolutely will, because you don't need much of a stimulus. But looking at it longer term, if you want to, you know, build curves or, you know, get muscle or change your body, actually change your body shape, then strength training needs to be the priority, really. And obviously during a fat loss phase, it's essential for making sure that you are keeping as much of your muscle as you possibly can.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing, there's so much emphasis, particularly for women, to be doing cardio. And I think even obviously being in a different country, it's kind of opened my eyes a little bit more.
Really?
Yeah, because it's just a little bit of a different mentality to weight training for women. And I think it's something that needs to be included more for women just everywhere. It should be a staple. And I think the more we can get used to that, everyone can get used to the fact that women need to strength train, the more it's going to be a staple, it's going to be accepted. So I think it's so important, like you say, to
everyone on it. Everyone needs to get strong. Like, there is not one bad thing about being strong, and that's what everyone's focus needs to be, because as you get older as well, that's the thing that you need, because you know, you want to be able to age and age well.
Absolutely. Like, muscle atrophy is a real thing, And yeah. you want to stop that happening as much as possible. You want to live a healthy life for as long as possible. You don't just, I was talking about this the other day in a previous podcast, but you're not just training for now. And I think people need to stop thinking about training about this week, this month.
Yeah.
You start thinking about in like long 20, term. 30, 40 years, because we're going to be living a long time.
Yeah.
So if you've done it in your ACL from doing 120 plyo box jumps, you might not be able to do a squat when you're that old. I speak from experience.
True story.
So, you know, it's thinking for the future. But I digress. I am sorry. So, what you've got one more sort of comment.
One up. Impatience. Well, yeah, I'll go with that one. Impatience. Yeah. I think people will... So, it's at the end of the day, it's up to people what kind of diet they decide they want to go on. But I think there's a real tendency. I've had a client recently who basically every couple of weeks was messaging me saying, right, I want to try this week. I want to try this week. Yeah. And it's like people are looking for that magic bullet, because fat loss is a slow process. Mm-hmm. It does not happen overnight. And especially when you get out of the kind of beginning phases, which is... For many people, especially if you're a bit larger in the beginning, things will go a lot quicker. Yeah. And I think it's when things start to slow down that people start to think, well, this isn't working. So that's when they can start jumping around and grasping to look for something that's going to speed things up. Or, you know, so I'm going to go keto this week, or I'm going to do IF this week, thinking that one of those, by just doing one of those, it's just naturally going to speed everything up. And all that happens is that you're dotting about doing nothing consistently probably actually slowing things down, because if you just stuck to what you were doing in the first place, if it was working, it would have continued to work with a few small adjustments.
Absolutely. And I think it's thinking about in 6 months time, if you're like not seeing that many results at the beginning, and you're tracking, for example, and then you think, okay, it's a few weeks in, I'm not seeing the results I want, let's, like you say, go keto, let's throw in some fasting, then, well, you might burn out doing that in a few months.
Yeah,
whereas
of course
in
6
months time, you, if you're just tracking still, you'd be in a much better place.
Yeah.
But you don't know until you experience it. And I think that's why someone like yourself, helping someone to do that and say, look, just keep doing what you're doing, it's going to be worth it in the end. That's why it's so hard. It's a minefield for people, because they have to do it on their own as well.
Yeah, and 100%, 100%. And, you know, anyone that... Fat loss is definitely... It's not easy, but it doesn't need to be complicated. And I think people, I don't know whether they think it should be more complicated than what it is, so that they need all these great big dramatic things in place, which then they're just going to get overwhelmed and it's almost not copeable for them. Yeah. So, you know, people just need to realise that keeping it simple is generally the thing that works best.
Absolutely. I think that's a good final mistake. It comes down to it. That's okay. I mean, it comes to a lot of things as well in life, but patience is something that we always lack. We want everything now. And with, unfortunately, with when it comes to weight loss, it's one of the most important things. So,
100%. Yeah.
So I have some silly quick fire questions today to finish off with.
Oh, God.
I genuinely Googled this. So I said, funny quick fire questions. So some of them were like really weird, but I've taken some out, so some of them are better. So right, I think there's only 10. It's fine, no stress. Right,
oh my god.
So best breakfast.
Omelette.
Worst breakfast.
Seafood congee.
What is that?
So you get it in, bearing in mind that I was crew, we used to get it on the Hong Kong flight. Going to land into Hong Kong, they would serve this seafood congee, which is basically like a porridge with seafood in it.
Oh. Oh my god.
It is literally, and you can get it in Asia, well, in Hong Kong definitely. I don't know about other areas. It's a breakfast thing.
Oh, it sounds lovely. won't be missing that at all.
No.
So, cat person or dog person?
Dog.
Sorry, I'm supposed to be unbiased in this. yes, you're right, correct.
Yes, correct, you're all right.
Morning workout or evening?
Morning.
Biggest fear?
Failing, no. Failing, not getting what I want out of life. So yes. Failing in that respect. I don't fear failure, yes. But I fear not achieving everything that I want to achieve.
Yes. Getting everything done. So
yeah.
No, that's a pretty normal one. That's fine.
Yeah. That's probably quite boring. You're probably wanting something a bit more exciting.
Not really. I thought it was actually quite deep. I was like, wow, yeah, that's quite profound.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd say something like clowns. I'm scared of clowns, Kate. That's like my default. If anyone asks my biggest fear, I'm just like clowns. I'm really scared of clowns. I don't want to talk about failure actually.
When clowns really, are quite scary.
They're not. It's just cliche to say that. Okay, worst thing you did at school?
Oh.
Or were you quite well behaved?
I was fairly well behaved. Worst thing I did at school? I think you stumped me with that one. I was.
Were you goody two shoes?
I wouldn't say I was goody two shoes, but nothing's sticking out in my mind of anything that I particularly did.
Okay.
I was kind of, I suppose, a bit comedial. So like stuff would happen to me. I mean, I got stuck down. We had these big pipes. This is completely not even related, but I'm going to go with it anyway. At the back of one of our classrooms, we had these massive pipes. And in between the wall and the pipes, there was a gap. And I used to sit at the back of the class. And I remember one day falling back, because I used to swing back on my chair. I remember falling off my chair and actually getting stuck down in between the pipe and the wall, like really stuck. Like we had to go and
really
stuck.
For longer than just like 30 seconds.
For longer just than like 30 seconds. We had to go and get like, you know, things to try and help leaving me out, that kind of stuff. So anyway, that was totally not the worst thing that I did.
It sounds quite like traumatizing.
It probably was a little bit.
The delicate years when you're at school, I'm not sure how I'd cope with that.
No, it really was.
Good one. So favourite subject at school.
Home economics, randomly.
Really?
Which was like, yeah, cooking. Well, I failed. I was failing science and maths. I failed.
Yeah.
Home economics and textile.
Okay, that's good. You know, it's useful.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Although I dislike cooking now, really. So I don't know that it could mean.
What happened in between?
Yeah, I know. I'm not quite sure.
Dreams were left to die.
Yeah.
So this one's a weird one. I don't know why I put it in. Do you sleep with your sheets tucked in?
As in the sheets that go over me, or the sheets.
That's what I was trying to work out. I was like, is this question?
So it must mean the sheets. It couldn't possibly be with the sheets underneath you untucked, because that would just be weird. Does anyone sleep like that?
That would do that. That would just creep me out.
No, completely untucked. I actually sleep with one of my legs hanging out of the bed.
Yes, because it keeps you a good temperature.
Keeps me a good temperature, and also I feel like there's some kind of hip stretching going on.
Yes, that's
the. Because I sleep with it angled up.
I think it's multitasking. It's fine.
It is at its best.
That's a good answer to that one. Might not include that in future. okay, this one is slightly more serious, so I added this one in. A groundbreaking mindset moment you've had anytime, anywhere.
Oh, good Lord.
Quite a broad one.
It is quite a broad one. Just repeat the question.
So a groundbreaking mindset moment you've had. So you've had like a realization about anything, like confidence, fitness, nutrition, anything.
I would say actually the I couldn't really pinpoint the moment when this happened, but when I stopped really caring so much about what people thought about me, and, you know, when I do anything or walk in a room or anything like that, thinking that everyone automatically is thinking a certain thing, or that they actually even, not in a horrible, like, nasty way, but that they even really care, that they even really care what I'm doing or anything like that. I think it was kind of almost a, I'd say it was actually a kind of relief, because I think when you remove all of that kind of angst on yourself about thinking that everyone is thinking certain things about you, it is, it just kind of brings a more relaxed, a relaxed aura about you when you walk into certain situations, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect one to end on. Just, like, literally don't care what people think, because people are so, like, they're probably more preoccupied with what's going on with themselves anyway. So.
Well, they 100% are. Like, everyone's all in their own, they've all got their own shit going on.
Absolutely.
So, not like they don't really care about yours.
Exactly. I think that can be taken for when you walk in the weights area, the gym, work, whatever. People just don't care. So,
it's true.
Good. I think that's a good one to finish it on. Sarah, it's been so nice having you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. And if you'd like to leave the listeners with your handle, so your Instagram, anything else, website you want to leave them with so that they can find you. Sarah puts out some amazing content every day, so I really highly recommend you follow her. So if you'd like to leave the listeners with that.
Yeah, for sure. So my biggest platform would be my Instagram, which is Sarah Duff Lifestyle and Fitness. My website is exactly the same, www.sarahduffslifestyleandfitness.com. And my Facebook is also Sarah Duff Lifestyle and Fitness. It's keeping it all together. So they would be my three main platforms.
Fantastic. So I think that's going to be really helpful for people. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Sarah.
You're welcome. Thank you.